Well, I think they have a rather simplified worldview, and they seem to deduce what's happening in Syria from their domestic polarities, that if they are opposed to the government here, so they assume that that same thing applies, or that same kind of a... you can say that, I mean, that's that same position is probably also valid in international conflicts. So if the Cameron government is detestable to you, so you would assume that because it's taking the side, or at least seems to be taking the side of the Syrian people, so you would assume that somehow their cause is thereby suspect. And so they simplify the worldview. And in the end, they see it all as a domestic context, rather than seeing that these people have their own aspirations, they have their own needs, and they would be, I mean, these people are always very vigilant when there is the smallest encroachment by the state, but they somehow are willing to excuse mass murder by a distant state just because it has the virtue of being in the bad books of the government that they hate at home.
But how can a leading investigative journalist like Seymour Hersh make that mistake?
Well, part of it has to do with the method, because methods of journalism are also evolving. Now there's so much open source information available about conflicts. So Seymour Hersh is relying on an old method. He goes and finds his sort of these hush-hush sources, and they tell him stories. But what he does is that he assumes that just because somebody's telling him a story in secret, that it must have some kind of, there's some samizdat truth in it. A lot of the time what happens is the sources are not neutral. They are always willing, they are also trying to spin you. And he has allowed himself to be spinned, this is not the first occasion, on various occasions in the past as well. And so he's relaying these stories which have been told to him by his hush-hush sources. And what he's failing to consider is that there is actually verifiable existing information, open source, which contradicts everything that is being told by his sources. So he never bothered to check that. He never bothered to even have it verified. So it was poor journalism, basically.
Do you think it's really an example of the Assad regime's propaganda effort? Can they take credit for the fact that leading figures like Robert Fisk, John Pilger, and Seymour Hersh have been so successful?
Well, I think I don't know if so much has to do with the regime's successful strategy. I mean, these people are almost, they have done it willingly, and there's also a willing audience for it. As I was saying, that there's a will to disbelief because people don't want their worldview to be shaken. And the story that Pilger or Robert Fisk is telling, or Seymour Hersh is telling, very much confirms their point of view. And so it eases the moral responsibility. We are seeing daily atrocities, and so that requires some kind of moral commitment. That requires, if you are in any way morally engaged in it, or emotionally engaged, so you feel the need to do something about it. But if you can somehow dismiss all of that as propaganda, so it becomes easier for a person to continue with their inaction or indifference.
Do you think that's true of the media generally in the West? I mean, I suppose the real question is, where is the Western media going wrong on Syria? Because the facts on the ground are simply the Assad's air campaign, the bombing campaign, the barrel bombing campaign has literally devastated the infrastructure in Syria. But that's not the impression you get from the media.
No, I think the media is trapped between two stories. One, what it sees on the ground, and it does report. For example, the BBC has done good reporting on the Syrian conflict, but at the same time, it's also trapped by this overarching narrative. So it has to balance what it sees with the kind of resonance, the story which is resonant with its audience, which is the terror narrative, and in which the bad guys are the Islamists. So in this case, they can present the silk tie wearing Assad can somehow become the lesser evil just because the other side, even if their demands are legitimate, so they can come across as just because of their appearance or the kind of slogans that they have, that they are the... And they are also presented as undifferentiated, even though there are big... there are very diverse and diffuse opposition, and there are, in fact... The Islamist groups, like ISIS, have been fighting more the rebels, the FSA, than they have been fighting the regime. But for them, it's an undifferentiated mass because they all wear beards, and so they're scarier for them than the tie-wearing Assad.
But isn't that the best example of sloppy journalism? I mean, for example, Assad only attacked ISIS, it seems, for the first time when ISIS succeeded in taking Mosul in Iraq.
Yes, I mean, and that was a very good PR move for it because it can now present itself itself as fighting terror alongside, you know, the United States or others. So until now, it wasn't doing it. And so for them, it was convenient. I mean, that's why Assad, the regime, had been very tolerant of ISIS, because they knew that the ISIS is making most of its advances against the rebels themselves. So I think that for them, ISIS has been a godsend, because it is extreme. It has been oppressive. So the Syrians are caught between the hammer and anvil of the regime and the and ISIS. So I think that that's why they never felt a need to tackle ISIS until now, because now they can win some PR points.
Most people listening to this broadcast will certainly not be aware that Assad has not attacked ISIS, that he has in fact released hardened jihadists to join ISIS, and in fact has actually nurtured ISIS. Do you think that's a real indictment of the Western media?
Well, it is, because as one of the other panelists said, that the headlines do the damage, because they have to choose a headline that is attention-grabbing. So an Islamist story always sells, a jihadist story. And so what they do is that any rebel group, which they would declare it conveniently an Islamist, or they would declare it conveniently an extremist group. So what stands out is when a rebel commits an atrocity. I mean, which must be condemned, obviously. You know, that anybody who is committing war crimes must face justice. The media always focuses on the exceptional. The regime's violence is no longer exceptional, and the only time that they focus is when, let's say, you know, there was for several months, the heart-eating rebel was the big story. Yes, it was a horrific thing, and, you know, the person must face accountability. But the thing was that they take that event, which is an exceptional event, and they erase the daily routine atrocities of the regime.
If you could ask Robert Fisk or Seymour Hersh or John Pilger to, I hate using the word, but it has to be said, improve their coverage of Syria, what would you say to them?
Well, I would just say to them that cover Syria in the same way that they covered Iraq, and don't embed yourselves, and you know, just understand the fact that when you're relying on sources which have either known interest, they have... if they're unreliable in some way, or there's a conflict of interest, so they should be conscious of that and report that. And so if they are, you know, Robert Fisk is willing to embed himself with regime forces and goes and interviews people under custody, so he has a responsibility to inform his reader that this person can't be telling an accurate story because he's under duress. And if he doesn't do that, then his reporting is unreliable. And also, he wrote a story dismissing the chemical massacre, saying that, well, he met a Russian in Damascus, and who told him that, well, this wasn't the regime, and it was, chemical weapons smuggled from Libya. Really, a Russian? I mean, is that the best he can do in terms of source? And would he have accepted that if an American journalist did something like that, when, after an American bombing, he goes to, he meets some American, random American in Baghdad, and who tells him that, oh, by the way, this latest atrocity wasn't committed by Fallujah wasn't attacked by the United States, it was somebody else. I mean, would he accept that? So it's just it's a double standard, and it's poor journalism.